Good morning. Today is Wednesday, October the 5th. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County Supervisor, Mr. Mike Wilson. Good morning, sir.
Oh, my God. It's morning. It's really morning.
Sorry to sneak up on you like that.
It's so morning.
But, you know, I think I stunned you in some of the pre-show conversation where I said that horses and cable cars aren't the ways to get to meetings anymore. You just kind of went, huh?
Yeah. You keep dreaming, Brian. You keep dreaming.
Yeah. No. I did walk by the old cable car shed in Eureka. You know, it's now called the Carson Memorial Building. And you can still see the tracks as the where they used to be laid. There's a little hump there in the yard.
It used to
come out onto Harris and bring them into town.
Eureka had cable cars, or not cable car. Were they cable?
Well, they were electric cars. They weren't cable.
Electric.
Technically, street cars.
Electric street cars. Think about this. How hip that would be today, right? And how cool, and what an interesting, and the way the town was laid out for all that and everything is just like, it's that, what we aspire to now.
And for me also, the fill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were San Francisco-esque. Yeah, anybody that's gone through Sequoia Park, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it suddenly doesn't get flat two blocks away.
Yeah.
Well, that is what we had, and there were trestles and all kinds of things, but...
And all the things we enjoy about these wonderful downtowns, like the style of architecture, the 5 and 6 story buildings and all that stuff, freak us all out now, right? Back then, there was no parking lots. That's how you got around were these electric trolleys. And it's so interesting. It's like, this is what we appreciate about the European cities and things like that. And, you know, our country took a different turn.
Well, I can remember talking with Harvey Harper before he died out in front of the house. And he said, going to the county fair was a big deal. Driving there was a day-long effort.
Yeah.
Each way, and then you'd spend a day there, or you'd camp out, and then you'd come back. It was like a 3-day sojourn.
Well, I mean, even Freshwater Park. Right?
Yeah,
right?
The old pictures of the 50s and 60s.
Right, and Freshwater Park was a place where people in Eureka could access.
That's where the high school kids went.
And where everybody went, because you could access it. There was sun, there was swimming, and you could get there within a reasonable amount of time because your travel time was a lot, you know, your travel
time was
method,
longer, yeah.
You know, was much slower. And so, you know, you really had to find places closer by to get that sort of experience.
I still have a bit of a challenge. I've talked to Tom Mattson a little bit about it, how they had the high dive contest there. I'm sure that OSHA would never allow anything like that anymore.
Well, that's,
but you just look at it, and even if you carved it
wrong
out.
Wrong agency, but yeah.
It might be ADA now, huh? Mm-hmm. All right, you ready for our why do we say it?
Oh, my gosh, I'd never win this.
Really?
Maybe you should have a prizes or something.
We've had a lot of people kind of come halfway close recently.
Oh, man.
It's
all so, you know, every time we do this, it's something old, right?
Oh, yeah. All right. Let's see if I find something a little bit more contemporary. Play for keeps.
Play for keeps.
I bet you that's not from the Middle Ages.
No. I'm sure it's not from the Middle Ages, but I bet it's like some sort of sporty thing, I imagine. Since you're wearing that baseball shirt, you're...
Last day of baseball.
Okay.
Well, at least for the Giants and the A's.
Well, that's one less thing we have to hear about.
Yeah.
So let's see here. Let's see. Play for keeps. I don't know. We're live, right? Let's see here.
You can't phone a friend.
Yeah. It seems like you're playing something. Keepers. Just so the audience knows, I got a hint from Brian. He held up his thumb, which gives me the hint that this has to do with marbles. Playing for all the marbles or something like that, right?
All right. Human nature being what it is, differences in personality often emerge very early. When marbles were high on the list of favorite toys for children, many bouts ended by sorting them out so everyone could go home with the ones that they had brought. But there was another and a far more serious kind of play. Before starting it, opponents agreed that all the marbles captured during the competition would become the property of the winner. Any boy or girl who put a bag of marbles at risk was likely to have a little thicker skin than run-of-the-mill players. a competitor to be avoided by all those who were also willing to play for keeps.
I'm going to tell you, I played marble.
Did you?
And I did play for keeps a few times.
Did you get any of the fancy marble collecting, or were they just kind of regular old marble?
Nah, not too much. Not too much. But I love finding marbles here and there when you're digging in the garden and you're like, oh yeah, marbles.
That's kind of a surprise. Yeah.
And then, you know, Humboldt County has this was part of this big marble hunt thing that occurred. Did you?
What I heard. Yeah. I wasn't really familiar with it, but
they've made fancy marbles with these, you know, there's amazing glass artists in this community.
Yeah, John. You know,
crazy stuff, but part of them are these marbles. And so they've placed them around. There's some sort of contest about it, of which I'm speaking totally without authority because I have no idea.
Winging it, I believe, is the,
speaking out my something. And, you know, it's like, yeah, but I do know that that they do that. It's a special thing. And I appreciate the art. But there you go. Marbles are a part of Humboldt County, too. So there
the way it looks is kind of cool. That required physical dexterity. And, you know, do that. I try to flip it down and hit myself in the nose. Yeah, it just wasn't there.
We always find a Humboldt County nexus to everything.
Yeah.
We can do it.
Yeah.
The place
slingshots and paper airplanes were similar for me.
Being the center of the universe, we'll find it.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. How do you spend your time as a supervisor? How do you know where to spend your time? Yeah, you've got, I think most of us are familiar with the concept of the board meetings.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're longer and sometimes they're shorter.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then there's all these other various and sundry ways to attend meetings for this and attend meetings for that.
Right.
But how do you structure a day? How do you look at a week or a month, know what the priorities are? Know that you're going to have a series of interruptions from things, you know, surprise flare-ups from the front burners that you don't recognize yet. But how do you try to do that?
With a schedule. and I would say that it's full beyond my capacity. But how do I do it? I mean, even just today, we'll have this interview. Then I'll go to a meeting where I'll be speaking with Jared Huffman about some, you know, wind energy issues. And then after that, I'll be going to Humboldt Transit Authority. And then after that, I'll spend the afternoon answering emails and phone calls.
Good. We'll talk about some of the things you're going to be talking about then when we come back and talk.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson. So you're going to be talking about something a little bit later on this morning. You want to share what it is?
What do you mean?
We were talking in the first segment about time management, things that are going on. You said that you had a meeting right after this where you were going to be making a presentation.
Oh, I'm not making a presentation. I'm just part of a group of local folks checking in with Congressman Huffman about a few things. And one of those things is, you know, the wind energy, the offshore wind energy stuff that's coming in terms of, you know, the decision making and what our community response is. And there's
been figured out yet?
Oh, there's a lot that has not been figured out so far, but it is definitely a big subject. As you know, we talk about it a lot. And, you know, the focus of this discussion is really what some term as community benefits agreements. These are discussions around when you're doing leasing processes for offshore or, you know, federal leasing for energy, there's some new discussions around, well, what, you know, can you tie within that lease community benefits associated with, you know, when the company is leasing that space, is there an arrangement with the federal government about basically not all of that lease going to the federal treasury, but actually being, you know, put back directly into the community that's most affected. And so there's
kind of like a sharing agreement.
Sure. I guess.
Sorry.
Yeah. Something like that.
Simple words over at this end of the.
Sure. So there are discussions around that. And the county needs to be at the table associated with that. And so there's just the discussions around what the framework might be, if we're going to do something like that. So that's really the subject of today's meeting with the congressman, is sort of familiarizing everybody with that concept.
He to everybody, or everybody asking for this consideration?
Both directions, because there's the federal government, this BOEM, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, or whatever they're called, and, you know, they're... which is the federal side, and which he is sort of like, you know, he's representing the federal side. And so they're discussing how the frameworks might be for something like that sort of leasing program. And then there's there's people representing community members or communities, like, so the county and tribes and fishermen and other interested in community groups, you know, trying to figure out what that might look like. And so there are discussions around that currently. And so this is part of that. So
yeah. if there was to be a profit sharing with the local community, then everybody's already starting to kind of circle the wagons to get their voice represented. Is that
something
kind of over on the side?
Yeah,
right.
I think you have the general sense. It's like, it's both everybody kind of representing their individual constituencies, but on the same team with regards to wanting the community as a whole
To benefit in some fashion.
To benefit, you know, to this. So that's one. And then after that, I have my meeting with the, you know, Humboldt Transit Authority. And so we're going to be, you know, talking about all the upgrades that are occurring there. And one of those you may have heard about is the $34 million hydrogen fuel cell buses that are coming. But it's just not the bus part about that. It's really the fueling stations. And so we're going to be really be part of the new energy economy and technology around a hydrogen fuel, and having renewable energy ties into that, because that's when you produce hydrogen fuel, it's like a battery, in that it stores energy that you can use when energy is maybe not being produced in another way. And so it's pretty exciting stuff in terms of...
Well, that would be an interesting discussion based off of what we've experienced statewide in the last month.
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay, so if you can't fuel them up, mm-hmm. if you can't plug in, what happens? Is the infrastructure available?
Right.
And then with the unfortunate stuff in Florida and
in
Georgia, if there's some kind of a cataclysmic...
Right. And even
now,
the
situation
we're seeing in Southern Humboldt with the, you know, PG&E.
We're going to go into that in the second half of the program.
Okay, well,
that's your stomping grounds.
Well, I mean, it's not my stomping.
Stomping grounds.
I grew up down there, but it speaks to the system that we've had of sort of centralized hub and spoke energy systems. You know, we're really needing to move to decentralizing and distributed energy production and energy storage in order to manage these systems. So it's not like just one giant power plant in the middle of and then with all these things, you know, all these
the spider
going out on all directions. But really, like, how do we do the more, you know, the microgrids that we've talked about with, like, distributed generation? So, like, and distributed storage. And in the next 20 years in the state of California and really across the nation, what we're looking at is revamping our entire energy distribution system that we've built over 150 years, right? So this is a really big deal. It's going to be a really big jump, and it's going to just fundamentally change our society in a lot of ways.
And it'll be different, too, because of the rural nature where we are.
Yeah.
The economies of scale aren't necessarily what exists in other communities, so it's not one size fits all.
No, different challenges in different places.
It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. Mike, before the break, we were talking just briefly about some of the challenges with energy delivery and energy production also. I mean, the two are related, and some of the challenges that Fortuna and Southern Humboldt, and I guess maybe Northern Mendocino also, are dealing with as far as trying to get PG&E hookups as they're under the edict of additional housing, et cetera, that every community seems to be under in our area. Is there an easy solution to this thing?
Is there ever an easy solution to anything?
I look at the PUC and go, okay, and maybe I just totally misunderstand their function, but that they would be kind of like overviewing everything that's going on in the state and pointing out weaknesses and making recommendations either up to the governor's office or to the power or the utility companies, and working with and trying to help them achieve the stated goals for California, and at the same time working with and supporting the businesses to achieve those goals. Is that not the function of that particular entity?
I mean, sort of. And I would say that the CPUC is evolving even currently now, just in terms of their function and view with relationship to power and power delivery in the state of California. And we all are changing fast with relationship to renewables and delivery. And like I was
The fires have shared an opportunity to rethink things.
Well, it's in that case, it's also not just that, but it's also land use patterns around that. And it's all part of it, because in the past, and I think it's still, you know, a local land use agency, like basically a county, would say like, yeah, subdivision, awesome, you should build that subdivision over there. And then the PUC, kind of on an older paradigm, would require PG&E, because PG&E is what they call a benevolent monopoly. Basically, it's a monopoly that then has government oversight, because they're a monopoly, and their profits are basically regulated as well. So the CPUC would say, okay, you have to deliver into those spaces, even though
kind of like the old airplane. Analogy, where if you want to get licensed, you have to also serve these communities.
For instance, right, exactly. Okay. But what that meant was servicing and putting these wire lines into these areas that now are in high fire risk zones, and that was not a consideration in those times. And so now it's like we've been forced into these spaces because of these expectations we have from the past about what development looks like and what it is.
So, and like that, the Nealands and the Freshwaters and the Fickle Hills and places
like that. Exactly. Okay. And so Now there's we have a new expectation, which everything should be undergrounded, which I think is, from a safety perspective, absolutely wonderful. From a cost perspective, that's really difficult.
Mind-boggling.
Right, it's mind-boggling. And I think, I think, you know, it's some I understand PG&E to be a company that's very profit driven, and there are a lot of decisions I don't like about that company, and I think I have a lot of criticisms like many others, but nonetheless, because they're a monopoly and they in this you know privatized sort of energy system, the cost of everything that we expect them to do then gets borne by the ratepayers. Right,
right.
And
it's a boomerang coming back at us.
Yeah, and so I think it's not just the decisions of PG&E, but it's also our decisions as communities about how we develop and how we look and sort of also taking stock in the decisions we have made and the decisions we're going to need to make in moving forward in the future.
Right. So if you want everything undergrounded in your community.
Yeah,
there's going to be a surcharge associated with that.
Well, I don't know.
As an example,
there could be, is what I'm saying. And so, nonetheless, we want that safety, and we do want those things, and so we have to figure out a way to make that all work. And so, that's the push and pull, and that's also, again, not apologizing for PG&E at all, but we also, as communities, we have to own our own decisions in those processes.
Well, and I would suspect, Mike, part of the challenge with this is that the decision made today is not just for the next 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Well, it's a long-term, just as what we have inherited is a long-term, and
right.
it's not realistic
to snap
your fingers.
That's why we're having these really interesting and difficult, challenging discussions around what is energy distribution in the future look like? What does energy generation in the future look like? What are the needs? What's sustainability? What's resiliency? What are the things maybe in our lives that we may have to actually change? And we can do that. I mean, just recently when we just had that heat dome situation and there was that energy emergency that occurred, one text that went out to everybody in California reduced our energy consumption by over a gigawatt, like instantaneously within half an hour, a gigawatt of power reduction across the state from a text that went out to everybody like, hey, turn off all your extra lights and do all this other stuff. Mm. Like, we can change. We just went through a pandemic.
Yeah, we got one to say, turn down your power.
Right, right.
I don't know who the source was on that one, though.
And think about, like, even, like, in the pandemic, we changed and we modified. There's a lot of things that we...
There's flexibility, sure.
There is, and I think part of the thing we're going to have to think about is when we think about future of infrastructure isn't just about... basing it on our expectations of what we've done in the past, but understanding what our commitment to, you know, a sustainable future is in the future,
and what the options are,
we're gonna need to adapt in ways that are unexpected, ways could be very, very beneficial and good from a lifestyle perspective.
I suspect that the biggest challenge that whatever it is. Mm-hmm. will run into is it my choice,
mm-hmm.
or is it an edict from on high?
Well, there's...
And as long as it's the marketplace or individual consumers going, yeah, that okay, I can do that.
Well,
that's,
you know,
one thing.
Oftentimes,
but...
choice is a construct, because in this way, because we're given choices. What kind of choice is that? Right. So.
Oh, they're limited choices.
Right. Yeah. And so we imagine that we often have choices, and they're not actually choices. And that's certainly true with, you know, the technologies that we can avail of. Those choices were made for us, and they said, "Well, here's your three choices." And we're like, "Oh, cool, we have a choice." But oftentimes we're not.
It's not the full spectrum.
Right. It's not
certainly.
What it is. And
yeah. I don't think we're going to have too many water wheels on the creeks to generate energy as an option that isn't mm-hmm. on the table.
Mm-hmm.
It's 844.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable. So book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:48. All kinds of weird ideas percolating in this studio during the breaks. So, Mike, with this current situation that we're in, that Southern Humboldt is dealing with, as you look, hey, that's like a blazer.
It is. Well, I'm getting ready for that meeting I'm going to. I got to look good.
Oh. I don't want to tell you. I'm not sure that's going to do the trick for you.
I'm not going to wear that shirt.
Be real, dude. what is the next step? You know, what do folks in Southern Humboldt that are listening to us that hear about this and know that it's an economic limiter, that it's a housing challenge, if they can't get electric hookups for their mother-in-law units or whatever, you know, expansion in their business, or what choices do they have? What would you recommend that they do?
Well, it's a really big, it's not going to be something that's going to be like fixed tomorrow, but it is an opportunity to really rethink about looking at, you know, distributed generation. So microgrids at your hospitals, for instance, and other facilities that are really important, meaning like, you know, isolating and looking at places where you can store energy for emergency purposes that you're going to need to do that. And that doesn't mean just those places, but in your homes, looking at opportunities for storage of energy in your systems, like your businesses and your homes. And this is one of those opportunities, and we've talked about this before, the electric vehicle revolution coming up, and looking at Prop 30 that's coming. I encourage people to look at that and think about ways that we actually fund. And I'm a big supporter of Proposition 30, which is a way to fund more electric vehicle charging as well as electrical vehicles, because they are mobile storage units. You can, you know, especially if you have an inverter with your electric vehicle, you can, especially with the new Lightning, the F Ford 150, you can run your house for days, if not weeks, if you're being, you know, efficient in how you do that under certain circumstances where you may need to. And then that in the future will be looking at, those will be systems by which we ebb and flow energy through our systems.
So now, still get fed by the traditional system, though, don't they?
In a lot of ways, they do in the current context. But what I'm trying to say is, we're going to be living through some tough times, but we're also going to be looking at a lot of opportunities and opportunities for change. And I think this is one of those spaces.
Ooh, that sounds heavy.
Well,
you must be gearing up for talking to a federal guy.
No,
yeah.
I'm working on it.
All right. Well, thanks for popping by. You can practice a little bit more on your way out there. We'll give you a little bit of extra time to get there. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you. I always have a good time.
All right, bud. See everybody tomorrow.